He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
Start the engines, we shall. It's Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jada Markin. And the week of this show had a fairly big race, which Jay will report on, going on in Lime Rock. I understand, because I was not in town for it personally, that with the cloud cover that was hanging over the Northwest Connecticut corner and well beyond, that the noise factor was amplified quite a bit, and we'll get a little discussion about that later on. So that people maybe quite far away from the track that aren't used to hearing it might have heard it. And aside from that, we've had rainy weather for over the past few days before this show is being done, which has given me an extensive experience in driving in fairly wet weather. And I want to discuss aquaplaning and from a different viewpoint, and Jay is welcome to comment on what he has felt in aquaplaning situations. But my talk about aquaplaning, that doesn't have to do with the tire situation, which I have said many times is a cause for probably a very scary aquaplaning capability of vehicles, but rather what is going on when you hit a puddle at 70 to 80 miles an hour that may be pooled on the side of a highway and enough out into the driving lane that even if you wanted to avoid it, you might not be able to. So your left side of your car goes through this puddle and starts an aquaplaning feel. But what really happens also, because my wife was quite scared when it happened to her, she had her face in her iPhone to not look at what I was doing on the driving side. The car suddenly lurched to the left and my hands were on the wheel, and she shuddered because she felt the car going off the road. And indeed it was in a very instant sort of way. The left tire, front tire, which hit the puddle first, and it was quite deep apparently, pulled the car sharply to the left. And I grabbed the wheel tighter. I had my hands on the wheel, but that's what happens when you hit a puddle at high speeds, even if you've got tires with brand new treads on them. Jay, you have any comment about that?
I have a few, actually. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And we always, as driving coaches, we preach soft hands on the wheels and not gripping the wheel and so forth and so on. But I think that in these conditions, if you're not holding that wheel tight, that car is going to be yanked to the left or to the right, depending on what side of the road this is happening. I think aquaplaning in general, it's a little like driving on snow. If you hit water and you lose contact with the asphalt and you're kind of floating on the water, the best overall situation things to do are to keep the car going as straight as possible and to lift off the throttle and also not necessarily not get on the brakes and just coast through it, kind of glide through the puddle. But in the case that you're mentioning where the water on the side of the road really grabs you to one side or the other, I think it just warrants being extremely careful. Our roads are not always very well maintained, and you find these puddles on the left and the right side of the roads, especially on the tighter parkways like the Taconic, older roads that are not very wide, where the water has nowhere to go on the side of the road, especially if there's a retaining wall in the middle of the roadway of the two directions. You often find on the left-hand side of the road these big puddles. You know, the solution to that really is to be driving in the right lane where there usually is a little more runoff. And if you are in the left lane, just try to stay closer to the center line and not drift all the way to the left. Again, preventive action is usually the best way to approach this.
Okay, let me segue into self-driving cars as connected to this topic that we're sort of brewing over. I also ran in this to a weekend, this friend of mine where I was, who has just purchased the latest version, that means a 2026 version of a fairly large BMW electric SUV. I do not know the model number, but it doesn't really matter. But what he was espousing was he charged his BMW. First, he charged it up to where it read 426 miles of range, which that we'll leave it at that. But then he says, I said, well, how is the self-driving feature? And he says, it's excellent, and I can go for miles without having my hands on the wheel. And I said to him, So the first thing that comes to mind, having just talked about aquaplaning and running into puddles on sides of roads, not that you, I don't know whether self-driving features are computerized enough to know that the weather might cause them to disarm themselves and not be available to the drivers. But let's say the storms have stopped, but the roads are still wet, and somebody is on a highway with a car that can be self-driving to the degree that this gentleman was telling me he can do with his newest BMW. What would happen if that car hit one of these puddles and the guy was actually letting it self-drive? Now, the question, Jay, could come up is, well, you should never, you should be well alert enough so that that doesn't happen and you're not letting it self-drive in such situations. But Jay has talked very positively about the capabilities of self-driving and how they are reaching eventually a far more reliable level than maybe they are right now, but to the point that you could actually take your hands off the wheel and the wheel would not vibrate as long as you're looking ahead. I gotta have eyes looking at you in the form of cameras. And if you stray with your eyes from the wheel, they will let you know that you should be getting back on form of watching it. But I don't know what happens in bad weather if self-driving cars are self-driving. Jay, you got any comment?
No, because I don't, just like you, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I've never been in a car and testing the capabilities self-driving vehicles in bad weather. But I am fairly confident that in the foreseeable future, they will become quite capable. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the situation is.
Well, don't we think the Chinese cars are already capable far more than our cars are of maybe?
Well, that's a whole different story, but okay, that's a broader statement, which is probably true, but I don't think you can extrapolate to this situation. You know, as far as self-driving, really, I don't know. It's interesting, and at some point we will know, because we'll be driving more and more of these cars that have these features, so eventually we'll find out, and I'll be happy to talk about it.
My next question, which I did not answer this gentleman, but which I've thought about as we are taping this show today for our listeners, is what do you do if you are happy to rely on the car self-driving itself or driving itself and to the point of the steering system as well? And you do take your hands off. And I mean, you can't read a book, as I suggested to him. You can't. And that's what he said. Well, if your eyes aren't on the road, the self-driving system is going to. He says his self-driving system, if you don't respond to a response signal sent from the car to you to get your hands back on the wheel, it will stop the car automatically within a certain number of seconds. And he says, because he tested it or it happened. The car stopped very abruptly.
So here's my take on this whole self-driving cars.
Yes.
I look at it more as, being similar to what's happened in aviation, right? Airliners today can, quote unquote, fly by themselves. You get on the plane, the pilots very seldom have the hands on the controls during the flight and sometimes not even at landing. But you still have to, so the skill set has become very different. It's all about monitoring and programming first, and then monitoring the different systems.
Right.
So, you know, airplanes have been flying, quote unquote, themselves for many years now.
Correct.
It doesn't mean that the pilots have become useless in the cockpit. Now, there is some conversation about going to single pilot flying. And this is, it's a real conversation. I don't think it's happening anytime soon. But it's real. You know, the work in cockpits of airplanes has gone from 4 to 3 to 2 pilots. You used to have flight engineers that used to monitor all the systems of the aircraft. Way before that, you used to have a navigator. All they were doing is you know, quote unquote, steering the airplane or telling you where to go. And then you had the pilots themselves. Now, 2 pilots in the front of the cockpit conduct all of these functions. And arguably, 1 pilot could do that. So I think in cars, it's a bit the same thing. And this is why I don't think we should let anybody and everybody necessarily drive self-driving cars. I think there's a new skill set, and I think there should be some kind of education and some kind of normalization in the systems and some kind of testing before you play around and sit in the back seat of a Tesla like these kids did a few years ago and end up crashing a car. So that's my overall view of things. And I know that in the meantime, you can get in robo-taxis in certain cities of the country where there's not a single driver in the car, in the vehicle, and the vehicle gets to your destination. So I don't know exactly where we're going with this. I think that, you know, we will still be in control of our cars somehow.
For quite some time to come, right?
Yes.
My question about the self-driving cars, the robo-taxis, and that so-called, what governs their capability to be behaving properly? Recently, there was a news blip about Waymo cabs all showing up at a roundabout in some residential neighborhood, going around and around in circles and or going places and coming back with nobody aboard. And I think also, if the electrical grid goes out for some reason, does that turn every robo-driving capable car into, put them into an automatically stopped position or condition? Is the electrical grid the key reliable factor in reliable operation of robo-cars other than the computer and the programming and the sorts of stuff you just mentioned?
I don't know, Robin, but if you ask this question in ChatGPT or Google AI,
yes,
you're going to get some very, very educated answers.
Okay.
Better than mine.
Okay, let's move on to your question. I'm finished.
So, you know, Memorial weekend, unfortunately, the weather's been pretty not cooperative, to say the least. But historically, it's always been a very big weekend in motorsports. And we don't talk a whole heck of a lot about motorsports on this show, but it is part of the automotive industry. And so I'd like to talk about it a little bit right now. So,
yes,
you mentioned Lime Rock. Yes. It is the kickoff of the spectator events at Lime Rock Park. And this weekend was what we call the Trans Am weekend. And Trans Am is a sanctioning body that has been coming to Lime Rock ever since their inception back in the 70s. So I think this was the 35th or 36th year that Trans Am was at Lime Rock. And I could be wrong on these numbers, but it's been a while anyway. And there have been years where there haven't been any Trans Am races. But Trans Am is a big thing again. And what is Trans Am? Historically, it's been, you know, high-powered, a lot of American muscle cars that have been modified for track use. And lately, the rules of Trans Am dictate that the car really looks like a sports car, but basically the chassis of the car is a tube frame with a body that looks like, you know, either a Ford Mustang or a Chevy Camaro, one of the iconic muscle cars that we still have, and with big V8 engines that are derived from what NASCAR uses in their main series. So these engines Run at very high RPM. We're talking 9, 10,000 RPM. Put out 800 or 900 horsepower. Very powerful, and yes, very loud. So these are probably the loudest things you will hear at Lime Rock, other than the NASCAR trucks in a few weeks. So yes, the cloud cover may have amplified the noise, but right from the get-go, these were very, very noisy cars. They make
What
for
were
great racing. And
the track conditions, Jay? Let's get to the aquaplaning for a moment. Was it raining during some of the races, and so they had wet
yes,
tires?
there were a lot of yellow caution flags and a lot of laps around the pace car because there were these cars are very, very difficult to control in the rain. You have very wide tires. Yes, they have rain tires, so they have groove tires in the rain. But still, it's a lot of power to try to put onto the asphalt, and these very wide tires make it very hard. These cars are very hard to drive in the rain. So very tricky conditions. But always, great racing. Unfortunately, again, the weather was bad. The car show was canceled on Sunday. So it is what it is. But the Memorial Weekend is always also very big. Both because it is the weekend of the Indy 500, which to this day remains the biggest motorsports event on the planet. And there are about a half a million people who watch the Indy 500 live. This year was an absolutely great race. I was there once, I think in 1999. And I spend the whole month of May in Indy, and it is a fantastic experience. And it's great racing. The other couple major events, Formula One was in Montreal this weekend for the C Canada Grand Prix, Canadian Grand Prix. They usually on this weekend are in Monaco, but this year there was a schedule change. They were in Montreal. So there was a bit of a conflict. For people who wanted to view on TV both the Indy 500 and the F1 race in Montreal. And the Indy race ended just minutes after the F1 race started. So kind of hard to watch both at the same time. And then last night, last but not least, was the Coca-Cola 600 NASCAR race at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And I spent all afternoon watching racing on TV, but did not watch the Coca-Cola 600. I'm not a huge NASCAR fan, so that was that in motorsports.
Jay, let's talk about racing at Lime Rock during. I presume that the rain was falling during some, if not all, the races on Saturday at Lime Rock.
Yeah, it was it started drizzling in the morning. I think the first race, which was an international GT race, endurance, 1 hour endurance, was in relatively dry conditions. And after that, it started raining.
Were you in the position visually to see what the rain did to the cars that come down that long straightaway at Lime Rock? And this is for people who know what Lime Rock's about and have to make a very sharp, you go into a very sharp bend of S turns. That's where I would think that if it were raining very hard and the track were actually almost liquid wet on top, it would be very tough to go around those turns at any speed above what?
Well, the hardest part about racing in those conditions is visibility. It's just like driving on the road. You just can't see anything. You're going,
Okay.
except you're following cars like, a couple feet apart, and all you see is a cloud of rain spraying in front of
In
you.
your
So
face, yeah,
it's
true.
very hard to find your references and know when to start braking.
Okay.
I only saw it from a distance. I knew it was happening.
Were there a number of accidents?
There were wipeouts. I don't think there were any serious crashes, but
Okay.
I'm sure there were wipeouts.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, I saw that from a distance. So
All right. Move on to your list. It has other interesting topics.
well, I read a whole art an interesting article on the Chinese
Car industry.
car industry and how it's going to affect us and how it really is affecting us already. And what this journalist was talking about was the fact that we have more and more knowledge, you know, just because news travels fast these days. We know more and more about the Chinese cars and their capabilities, even though our market, the U.S. market, is pretty, I wouldn't say airtight, but close to Chinese vehicles right now. They're all around us. Okay, we know about them in China. We know they're coming to Canada. We know they're in Mexico, and we know they're in Europe. And everywhere they're going, they're making inroads. So it's not the fact that we are aware of this is just having a psychological effect that, in the sense that we are expecting more for less. And this particular journalist was even going, saying that it was affecting the price of used EV cars, like to the fact that, well, why would we want to pay $30,000 for a used EV that has 3-year-old technology when other people in other parts of the world can get a new car, a new EV, for that price? I'm not sure exactly where he was going with that, but other than the fact that, you know, sooner or later, I agree that we will be driving Chinese cars even here in the U.S. Might take a while, but I think they're coming.
Well, the threat, in my opinion, is really to the American manufacturers is the cost differential that it takes to produce electric vehicles in our production world as opposed to the Chinese production world. And we all know what the real reason is. It's the hourly pay rates are far less, and the part components are far costs are far less. And the Americans will never be able to, I think, compete in a production manner at the cost price level that the Chinese are already showing the world they can do it and are doing it.
Well, what's happening is what the Chinese are going to do is what all the other manufacturers from other countries have done over time, is they're going to try to position themselves by building factories in the particular markets they're serving. I mean, Tesla builds their cars for the Chinese market in China. Tesla builds their European cars in Europe. The Chinese are looking at joint ventures with Stellantis in Europe to build cars for the European market in Europe. So, yes, there's a price and a cost issue, but if you look at the way we've subsidized electric cars, right, in this country with and every country has subsidized electric cars. China's done it. The Europeans have done it. We did it with the last and now gone $7,500 tax credit. Yes, it has helped manufacturers get the cars on the market and bring the overall cost down. But now that the tax credits are gone, for instance, you still see Tesla pulling ahead of the other manufacturers. Like Elon Musk was the first one to say, I don't care if we take the tax credits away. We're still going to sell more cars. And I guess he was right. And I hate to give him too much credit for anything, but they still are. Tesla is still the number one car electric car manufacturer in this country. But if you look at electric cars in this country versus the rest of the world, our share is dwindling, and I do think we're falling behind. And I think the Chinese will eventually make it here, and I do think we will buy their product. I think, you know, the arguments that, you know, Chinese make poor quality product is just so outdated as a viewpoint.
That's a complaint. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're that ignorant that you think they cannot make a good product, all it takes is looking at their new luxury car called the Maestro, Maestro S800. It's an ultra luxury car that's directly targeted at Mercedes with the Maybach and Rolls Royce. And you know where they're going to sell? They're going to sell them in parts of the world where we can't sell their product, like Russia, for instance, and obviously China. So, yeah, I can go on a different on a tangent here, but I think we've said enough of this about this for now. So, what I want to talk about too, at Lime Rock on the Midway, Connecticut State Police was there with a team of troopers that were there primarily to recruit people into the force. But they came there with three cars, no, two cars. They had two Mustang GTs, and those are two of the three only new pursuit vehicles that the Connecticut State Police has. One was silver, one was gray, and the third one, we can guess, and I was told, what is black. So these are three cars that you are likely to encounter on Connecticut highways, and highways only. They are highway patrol vehicles. So I had the opportunity to talk with a couple of the troopers, and one of them was assigned to one of the cars and had a big smile on his face. And
I bet.
he's like, "Can you believe they're paying us to drive these things?" Which they only just got last Thursday. So this is brand new.
We better hope they can drive them.
Well, yeah, I didn't want to insult anybody, but that was my question. I invited them to come and drive the simulator a few times, but they never came. But they were busy. I get that. These are real Mustang GTs. They are not, I did a little bit of reading in the meantime. Ford does not produce a police interceptor version of the Mustang GT. So these are
They don't need
purely
to.
stock Mustang GTs that are slightly, that have special equipment to that the police forces need.
Cards.
But interestingly, these Mustang GTs actually cost less than the typical police interceptor Explorer. But also, there's not a whole lot of performance difference. So, I mean, the vehicles look really cool, right? They're great looking. They have tinted windows. When the lights go on, they're gonna scare a few people. It was cool looking for sure.
Did they have light bars on the top, or with the
They do
lights all
not have
hidden
light
behind the
bars, but they
windshield?
have lights on the top of the windshield, everywhere in the grill, in the
No.
blinkers, in the side mirrors. I mean, they light up, and when one lights up in back of you, you will know for sure. Having said this, I think police pursuits are not a good thing, and even most police forces will not engage in hot pursuits. It's just not worth it. It is too risky. You're causing more
Potential
risk of
damage.
major crashes, that and it, the risk reward ratio is just not good. Having
Well,
said that, the other day I was coming back from New York late at night, and I encountered a half a dozen BMW and Mercedes performance cars just driving, weaving through traffic at ungodly speeds, and it's just uncalled for. Is the solution to pursue them with police cars? I don't think so. Again, I think it's too dangerous.
Jay, first of all, with only three of these Mustangs in the fleet, it's very highly unlikely that any of us are going to see one behind us anytime soon. But the fact of the matter is, I see the New York State Police are driving Tahoes, Chevrolet Tahoes, as part of their force of the cars, vehicles, along with the Dodge Chargers, I think they are. And the like, and I do not know what a police interceptor Tahoe can do that a regular Tahoe with a V8 engine couldn't do as well. But to your point, I agree that the pursuit is potentially causing a cause for more dangerous results than non-pursuit situations are. But I'm not sure how they're going to deal with those weaving, slalom driving. BMWs that you see on 684, on Route 95 in Connecticut and the like, and Route 8, because there's without numerical numbers of police on our roads, we're not going to have the ability to even control that kind of driving. So with that in mind, we will be back next week for another show of Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.